It's 8:14. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, after a successful campaign by the nonprofit Save People, Save Wildlife to install a wildlife bridge over I-80 at Parley Summit, the organization now focused on creating protections for motorists and wildlife along State Route 224. In the studio with the organization, I have Lorelei Combs along with Tom Farkas to talk more about their efforts with UDOT to address the area. Good morning.
Good morning,
Good
Leslie.
Good morning.
So I understand that you have some 3,000 signatures from the community supporting your efforts.
Yes, 3,400.
So what are you doing with those?
Well, we're talking to UDOT and requesting some wildlife mitigation along SR 224 and trying to make an impact and a difference in our community.
Yeah. So 224 has been identified as the fifth most dangerous roadway for wildlife collisions in the state. This was done by a study contracted by UDOT, and we've reported on that study. So showing that there are five of the top 10 hotspots here in Wasatch and Summit counties. What does that do for your efforts?
Well, we started obviously with I-80. And then after Dr. Kramer's report, it was pointed out that 224 was the fifth worst spot in the state for vehicle wildlife collisions. But 224 is in UDOT's Region 2. And we had been working with the people at UDOT Region 2 from the beginning when we started working on I-80. So we figured because of that relationship, we would start with them to try to have some measures taken along 224 that would improve the situation. You're right that three of the other top 10 are within our region, Summit County or Wasatch County nearby. They are actually in UDOT's Region 3. And we have not as yet established a relationship with them, but that's on our agenda to start that as soon as we can. But we just had a follow-up meeting with UDOT. It's going to take a long time to come up with a real solution for 224, just like it did for I-80. They didn't just decide to build that bridge, you know, last year and then put it up. It was probably maybe a 10 or 15 year process, and it'll probably take at least that long to come up with a proper solution for 224. But because it was identified as such a dangerous spot, we, and I think people from Park City, went to UDOT and said, what can we do right away? And research and luckily common sense has shown that a lower speed limit would help somewhat in reducing the vehicle wildlife collisions. So we were successful with Park City to get UDOT to put a lower speed limit on that section in front of the McPollen Farm, actually from St. Mary's to Meadows, which used to be 55. Probably 55 for that type of roadway and that type of open space is typically appropriate. So they agreed to do the 45 mile an hour speed limit. Unfortunately, actually some people complained about that when it first happened. I think, you know, if you have to slow down, some people are, you know, get a little irritated. So they commented on that to UDOT. And when we met with UDOT yesterday, we pointed out that a lot of our information. We just talked to one of your people out front that actually thanked us for doing it. So a lot of people are actually appreciative of having that speed limit lowered. And I think it should be pointed out for those that maybe think it's annoying, for that distance of roadway to go from 55 to 45 is only going to slow down their travel time by like 14 seconds. So we think it's a good idea.
Well, but I understand that UDOT's considering moving it back up, though, to 55.
Well, we've talked to them about doing that. So in addition to having that speed limit, because people weren't used to that speed limit, we needed other information conveyed to drivers that that was happening. So first they put up the variable message sign that said wildlife crossing caution to try to have people think that, yes, if they need to be cautious, they ought to be going at that lower speed limit. That seemed to have some positive impact, but we thought maybe there was something else that could be done. And then we suggested that maybe we could have what they call those driver feedback signs. So if you have a flashing sign that says, this is your speed, to remind people that they are going faster than the speed limit. So those three items UDOT agreed to do, but they, in doing those kinds of things, as I think is typical for how they conduct their business, they viewed that as a temporary measure. Well, as I just said, it's going to take a long, long time before we get a permanent solution. So we've been encouraging UDOT to try to make those temporary measures permanent. And we feel that after our meeting yesterday that they are moving in that direction. They've been doing a study on the speed limit, and they think that actually it may be likely that there would be information available from their crash study data that they could leave the speed limit at 45. And they are actually looking at cost estimates and contractors to place permanent variable measure signs on the side of 224 and also the feedback indicators. Apparently those flashing speed limit, your speed limit thing, is a low energy user, and they can actually install those and have them operated with solar energy. The variable message signs, though, do require direct energy, electricity connection. And so the thing that they're looking at now is where they can find a source to provide electricity to the signs if they permanently mount them on 224. And they're also going to look at ways to move them a little further off the roadway to avoid what they call their open collision area, and also to have them mounted on breakaway posts in case somebody happens to hit them and it would be less of a severe accident.
So it sounds like you've also asked for a traffic light at White Pine Canyon Road.
We did.
What was the response to that?
They've said that, you know, that is something that would be, that they've actually already thought about might be necessary in the future because of the increased traffic along 224 and the increased traffic that comes out of St. Mary's and the temple across the street. So they actually said they would do what they call a traffic light warrant study. And what they said, that could probably be done in...
They said that it would take about 2 weeks to do the study, and they would let us know.
Yeah, so they said they would consider that, look into it, and see if that would be, as they call it, warranted.
And it had already been identified with Park City that could be a possible future site for a stoplight, so...
And the idea behind that stoplight is that I think it's, roughly around Ranch Road, if you're coming into Park City, the speed limit is reduced to 45. And that 45 speed limit actually used to be maintained to about St. Mary's, then it went back up to 55, and then back down to 40, 45, and I guess even 30-something coming in, you know, once you're in closer into Park City. So people are kind of used to hitting that spot and ramping back up to 55. So the idea was, and it's actually Lorelei's idea, that if there were a stoplight layer, that would give people additional time to think about there is a lower speed limit. We know probably right now if you pass that light at the canyons, you're liable to start, you know, hitting the heavy on the accelerator. So it'd be just another reminder because, again, the lower speed limit is the only thing we can do right now to try to reduce the vehicle-wildlife collisions. I think research has shown that actually the lowest limit that would be, not the lowest, the maximum limit that should be looked at to avoid vehicle-wildlife collisions is 40 miles an hour. But if we can get 45 at this point, you know, we're happy with that. And
I was just going to say, one more solution, though. I mean, UDOT has been asking Park City for years to assume ownership of 224, basically from Empire Pass down to Park Avenue. Is that a solution, though, the community just taking over 224 from Kimball Junction to Empire Pass?
Well, you know, UDOT is a government agency. Park City is a government agency. Just because a different government agency owns a stretch of highway, you still have to address the issues, their issues. Obviously, one of the drawbacks in trying to get UDOT to do more is funding. So if Park City owned the highway, that funding would still be an issue. We know in meetings that we've had in the past with them that Park City is supportive in trying to come up with solutions to 224. They actually own the property on both sides of 224. So if there were something like a wildlife overpass, which Save People Save Wildlife has recommended, there wouldn't be an issue of having to deal with private property owners in getting that done. Park City is the owner on both sides. So, yeah, they don't own the road, but they own everything outside the UDOT right-of-way.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing if the city was under the city or county's ownership, then they dictate what happens on the road as opposed to having to ask UDOT every time.
Certainly they would dictate, but I think the bottom line, Leslie, is that dollars dictate. And unless the city or the county had a way of getting the money better than UDOT gets the money, we would be facing essentially the same situation.
Okay, so for the short term, it is going to stay at 45. Did you get that commitment, the speed limit?
The commitment we got is that they still have 3 months left to their survey. And in 3 months, then they will determine it. If the speed limit is to be increased back, they would not do it until 1 year of when it started to be reduced. So that would be next fall. But they felt strongly at this point that they had no intention of wanting to increase it. So
I think if they are looking at crash data, and if the crash data is reduced because of the reduced speed limit, then I think that would certainly warrant keeping it at 45.
They're also going to be doing a study on 224 for the next 2 years, and they're going to be collaring the moose, the elk, and the deer, and they're going to be trying to find the best wildlife mitigation for 224 with a possible overpass for the animals. So we're going to be seeing DWR involved collaring the animals out there in St. Mary's Field.
The research that's been done so far mostly has been vehicle wildlife crash data. So now they want to make sure that they have migration data for the animals. And they're looking at the elk, obviously, go back and forth the highway twice a year, probably more often in the winter than any other time. But there's a lot of movement by moose and elk. So they want to know where that movement is, how many are moving, and they... the fellow from DWR said they can tag maybe 6 deer and get a pretty good idea where the rest, all of them are going. So I think they're actually looking at identifying if there's a particular place across 224 that can focus in on where that ultimate solution ought to be.
Okay. I need to leave it there, guys. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Lorelei Combs and Tom Farkas with Save People, Save Wildlife. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:28 now, good morning. The Park City Council met last night to discuss historic preservation, the Kimball Arts Festival, and more. Joining us with a recap, I have Councilmember Becca Gerber. Good morning.
Good morning.
The council received an update on the new Memorandum of Agreement for Historic Preservation under the Flagstaff Development Agreement. Council seemed to agree that the new terms are better than what was discussed last year, but still advocates like the museum have concerns about enforcement, that they need the money now to repair the structures, not spread out over 20 years. So how is the city going to address their concerns, or is this as good as we get?
I think we were actually very well able to address many of their concerns last night. The new EPMOA, Empire Pass Memorandum of Understanding or Agreement, actually more than doubles the amount of money that will be dedicated towards historic preservation over the next 20 years. And we are really able to front load that money, and we were able to do tremendous work this winter already on the Judge Mining and Smelting Building, getting that roof rebuilt and restored. So we're headed in the right direction, and there has been a great spirit of collaboration between the city, the Empire Pass Homeowners Association, and many of the developers in that area, and we're hoping to be able to continue that into the future and continue to be able to preserve these historic buildings and mines.
So how much money do we have next summer to spend? Is there a bulk payment coming?
Yes, so there is a 240 $100,000 that we know that we'll have coming in this next summer, and we're hoping to be able to leverage that. And there have been developers and even potentially the city that are willing to pay some of that money that will be due over the next 10 years up front. So we're looking to really front load it and get as many projects underway as possible and really developing a priority list so we know where we need to focus our money.
So once the 20 years is over, is that the end of the funding, or is this in perpetuity?
Well, we're hoping to be able to continue these discussions and continue making plans. There is always more development that is being asked for or other plans. So we'll keep the lines of communication open and work well collaboratively and be able to continue this discussion.
So if we were to look at the original Flagstaff agreement, mm-hmm. I mean, is there the money that's coming in that was promised as part of that agreement?
You know, from our understanding, based on the original agreement, there would have been $545,000 over 10 years, and we were able to negotiate up to $1.34 million over the next 20 years. So we feel like we've made great progress and we're headed in the right direction. So we'd really like to keep moving with this. We also have plans underway for the Daily West headframe. Deer Valley's under contract for that purchase. And so once that's settled, we can work on a plan. And then we also, this year, we revised our historic district grants, and we made it so that we could put money from the historic district grants towards mining renovations and stability and maintenance and emergency repair. So we are actually able to dedicate quite a bit more money towards these projects.
All right. Council also discussed some changes to the Kimball Arts Festival, including removing the entrance fee for everyone and expanding the festival footprint on Main Street. So freeing the fest for everyone seems to align with the city's social equity goals, but there's also a cost to taxpayer for the increase in city services that will result. So how are we justifying this?
You know, we feel that the Kimball Arts Center has been a great partner to the city. They are a great community partner, and we really appreciate their mission and their desire to make art and that engagement with the arts available to everyone. And so, yes, it is a difficult balance because we do understand that eliminating the entrance fees could potentially result in a huge increase in the number of attendance. Kimball Arts Center is only predicting a 10% increase. Our city staff thinks it could be closer to 25 to 30% increase. And so finding that balance and how we pay for it to cover the mitigation and make sure that it's not only a safe festival, but it's also enjoyable and we continue to protect our residents is really important to us. So I think where we landed last night is that we are going to have our staff in the Kimball Arts Center really sit down and go through some numbers and come up with a percentage increase that they both kind of feel comfortable with, and we'll split the cost, the additional mitigation cost, between the Kimball Arts Center and the city.
Okay. So, I mean, is that what we come down to, a 20% increase and then just hope for the best?
You know, I'm not sure exactly how they'll get to that number, but there's a little bit of that, and we're going to do what we can to make sure that we continue our promise to protect our neighborhoods in Old Town and also to in the long run, reduce our city fee waivers for special events, but also making sure that we can, help our local nonprofits in whatever ways we can. We really do appreciate all that Kimball Arts Center does for us, and this is a big step for them, and we're hoping that, it all works out. We can make it a great event for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, and the reality is that we can't go back. Once you make it free, I mean, then to start charging would...
Well, and that's really, that's up to Kimball Arts Center. This is their event, and they're making a decision that they feel fits with their mission, and they need to be able to operate in a way that they feel like is going to meet their mission and their goals. And so I don't know if it's the city's role to come in and say that we're going to control their entrance fees.
All right, staff also proposing changing the city's special service contracts process again. That was after it was amended last year. Services that are considered regular or ongoing, like trail maintenance and recycling, sound like they're going to get moved out of the process to actual city departments, while social equity-related services will be the new special service contracts. So mm-hmm. Is this making the bidding for the grants less competitive?
So really what we're trying to do is separate out the services that we as a city would have to pay for to maintain our level of service in the town on a yearly basis, and then also to provide a pot of money going towards our special services or that we're dedicating towards social equity programming that are innovative and new ideas that won't be worked into these nonprofits' budgets as a year-over-year expectation, but really enable them to try something different or something new. And we weren't able to do that under our old system. So by moving things that we know are important to Park City, funding for health treatment, recycling and waste, our trails management, to nonprofits that are better able to fulfill those roles than we are, we feel like we're taking a burden off of the city and able to focus on really these innovative new ideas. And so, yeah, we feel like we're moving in the right direction, and it is a change, but I don't think...
What's the budgetary impact, though? I mean, because if you're not using money to pay for trail maintenance through the special services contract, it now comes through what? Public Works?
We still are. We took that $600,000, whatever approximate amount, and we just kind of split the baby and took the money that we were kind of using for those contracts and moved it over. And so it's got its start. For right now, it will still be from that same pot of money. We'll see how we move down in the future and how it all shakes out and if it works. We're still trying some new things. So hopefully in the long term, we can be able to secure money for those special service contracts that we feel are very necessary to the normal operations of the city, and then really be able to focus on some different and innovative ideas with social equity and the other special service contracts.
All right. City is wrapping up its Vision 2020 process. What have you learned from it?
It has been a really great experience. We have been able to reach out to so many different groups in the city, and it's very rare that we actually do get to hear from all these different segments, but between neighbors and all of our different nonprofits and, the lodging associations and chamber, and even we've reached out to Summit County. And to just be able to hear back from so much of our community as to what's important, what they fear, and what they're hopeful for in the future. And I really have heard a lot that people are looking for us to take some bold actions and to really pave our future, as opposed to letting things happen to us and let the growth around us happen to us, to do what we can to take control in our community.
So talk to me a little bit about what you think that bold action looks like. I mean, is it to preserve what we have, or is it about growth and becoming more urban-like? You know, I mean, we're talking about more transit. We're talking about more housing developments, uh-huh. where the middle class can afford to live. I mean, what is that bold action look like to you?
Yeah, so, we haven't really gotten to the solutions part. I do know that from what we've heard from our community, it means that we do a better job of managing our transit and our transportation and congestion in town. I'm not sure what that means. I love the idea of a gondola. I think that that's something that fits very well with who we are. But there might be other ideas we haven't even thought of. And so being willing to keep our minds and our eyes open as we explore some new transit and transportation ideas, I think, is very exciting to me. I do see us continuing to move forward with affordable housing and creating new neighborhoods in Park City that are year-round resident neighborhoods where people live and work and volunteer and engage in our community at a level very similar to what we saw 20 to 30 years ago. And, I think that tourism has been such a bonus to us. It has really fueled so much of what we've been able to do here. Being able to find a balance between a quality of life for our residents and a great experience for tourists is going to be a goal for us as we move forward. And I don't know exactly what those changes will be. The solutions, I think, are going to be things that are very different and maybe things that we haven't thought about or talked about in the past. But it's exciting to have this impetus from our community to explore new ideas and really try something different and bold.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Becca?
I did want to mention that we have our State of the City event at the Santee Auditorium on Tuesday at 6 p.m. And this is really a celebration of everything we've accomplished over the last year. There will be pie and ice cream and desserts. We will also have translation. So if you're around and you're available, we hope to see you at the State of the City at the Santee Auditorium on March 3rd at 6 p.m.
Are we just going to hear from the mayor? Is that
there, you will hear from the mayor, David Burrell, who has been leading our summit, our Visioning 2020. And then I think there will be some breakout sessions where with the council where you'll be able to ask us and do some one-on-one, or not one-on-one, but group question and answer.
Okay. Becca, thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
It's Park City Council Member Becca Gerber. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, recently, Habitat for Humanity traveled back to our nation's capital for a discussion at the federal level on local housing needs. In the studio with an update are two of those who went. I have executive director for the Park City, Summit County, Wasatch County Habitat for Humanity, Shelley Barris, along with her consultant, Allison Kuhlow. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, so Shelley, why don't you talk, what prompted this trip? I mean, it was a rally organized by the national level of Habitat for Humanity?
Right. Habitat for Humanity International has a government relations department in Washington, D.C., and this is an annual event that they do a day on the Hill, trying to, you know, rally support for housing and other affordability issues. And this year was a little bigger because they have kicked off last summer, they kicked off a national advocacy campaign called Cost of Home. And that's kind of one message for all the 1,200 affiliates of Habitat across the country to really bring some of these issues to the forefront. And we know affordable housing is already one of those hot topics, and they just are kicking off a campaign that brings all of our Habitat affiliates together.
So why was it important that you thought that you were there?
Yeah, I think that the campaign really helped us. We've started some work here locally, taking that platform, and we just felt like it was time, really the time is urgent to get up there and be a part of that support with them to share the messages that I think our national leaders need to hear.
So you did meet with some of Utah's congressional representatives. Who were they?
We were able to meet with the offices of Representative Rob Bishop and Ben McAdams, as well as Senators Mike Lee and Mitt Romney. So we were able to chat with their staffers. There were a couple of bills and appropriations that Habitat was highlighting that was going to be able to help nationwide. And so we went and talked about those bills, but also tried to connect them with what's going on within Utah and affordable housing issues we have going on in Utah. So right now, with the Cost of Home campaign, we're really trying to take a step forward and not only start to represent ourselves more within our normal jurisdictions, whether that be Summit County or Wasatch County, but we went to the state last week and spoke with our representatives there, as well as now at the federal level. It's going to take multiple policies and multiple efforts to be able to start to address affordable housing and to start to increase the number of affordable units. What we're hearing right now is that 1 in 6 families are paying more than half their income on housing, and that's nationwide. And what the Cost of Home campaign has allowed Habitat to do and the affiliates is not just talk about home ownership, because that's how people know Habitat, but they're allowing us to talk about the full housing spectrum from rental to senior. So we're able to really start to identify additional ways and be able to support additional organizations that we can work in parallel with.
So did you get a response? Did you get some support? I mean, these are men that don't have these issues.
Right. And very interesting, a lot of their staff kind of shared with us they haven't really been involved in housing and the policies, and they weren't really aware of it. So it was a great opportunity for us to bring some of these issues in front of their staff. And I think they all know they're hearing it a little bit more. You know, I think the crisis word, you know, has been a little overused, but I feel like that's where we're at. And so we were able to really share some information that I think they didn't know about, and talk about the need, and then really bring it back to our community, because that's who they're should be representing, and they should know what's happening here.
So specifically, I mean, what are our needs here, and how can federal government help?
Right. Well, there's some funding. There's quite a few different types of funding that support affordable housing, and they support Habitat for Humanity across the country. So there's a lot of federal funding. The home funding, that's really a large one that people know about. But there's SHOP funding, the AmeriCorps program. You know, we're really looking to continue support with that. Habitats across the country, we all have the opportunity to utilize AmeriCorps volunteers to come and help support the work we're doing. So we were able to really talk about those issues, and that they would hold the funding, you know, for those, and, you know, ever consider increasing that funding would be great. And then there was a new piece of legislation that was being brought forward And we really wanted to support that with Habitat for Humanity International.
And what that's called, it's NIA, and it's the Neighborhood Home Investment Act. And it really does help rehabilitate home and distressed communities. But the piece is that this is not just for metro areas, but also for rural. So this program itself could be very beneficial for Utah in general, and the need that we have to be able to remodel homes that, you know, once remodeled would be above and beyond the actual value of the home, and how do you get financing for that, and how does that work? And so this starts to address some of that.
Okay. And I know that I hear from Scott Loomis, too. Just, I mean, timing is so difficult. You know, it's like you think you've got the money, and then the money goes away. So, I mean, anything that you deal with like that?
Right,
as well?
Absolutely. Trying to piece all of those pieces together to make the whole picture work is very difficult. And everybody has a different timing and what it takes. And then it all has to match up with how you get through the planning process and actually get to start to build. So I think we were really happy to be at the state as well with the Utah Housing Coalition, their Housing Day on the Hill. And we were able to talk to all three of our representatives that cover our community, and they seemed more aware of the housing things that were in front of the legislature this year.
And while I'm not expecting huge movements at this moment, just for them to understand that we're out there, we're watching these bills, and even speaking with Representative Wild, you know, he had a piece of paper and was writing down, okay, now what bill this, and what about, you know, he was following it, so at least his eyes will now... You'd linger on that a little longer as if we weren't there.
All right. So tell us what you've got going on right now.
Right. So we are working on two houses out in Silver Creek Village, and happy to see this sunny weather come along so we can melt a little bit of snow and get our concrete work done. And we're still working on our subdivision approval for the 24 townhomes that we also have in that community. So trying to work through that process and get ready so that we're ready to start building, digging some holes and building on those as well.
All right. So is it your work just in Summit County, or are you doing work in Wasatch as well?
So we don't have anything in Wasatch right now, but definitely paying attention and interacting with those communities over there to see there's a lot of stuff coming up in that community as well. So we're paying attention, talking to people, making sure what we can fit in where it works for us in that community.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just think we always like to say, remind people that, you know, our Restore is such a support for us. It is one of those key financial things that helps us support the work we're doing. So come and visit us, see what we have going on. It's a great place to kind of get reminded about what Habitat's doing.
Okay. Allison, Shelley, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, KPCW's Winter Pledge Drive kicking off on Monday under the guidance of our newest member to join the station's development team, Development Manager John Boyack. He's joined in the studio by KPCW General Manager Renee Miller. Good morning, both of you guys.
Hey, good morning.
So, John, let's have you start and just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted the job at KPCW.
Huge public radio fan. I've been in Park City now since April of last year and have worked in nonprofit and at the University of Utah for a long time. Wanted to live, work, play in town. Heard the job on the air and basically just freaked out about it. This could be a career move for me. I got to get everything in order and make sure I make the right pitch and present myself accordingly. And just everything, all the conversations we had and the interviews, that everything just felt right and great. Public radio does so much for the community, particularly Park City. Each morning listening to your show, honestly, I'm a big fan. Learning about local politics and the local news angle was something very interesting to me. And plus, I love the music. The news format, the format of the station is just brilliant to me. Half music, half news. Don't burn out on either. And so just thrilled to be a part of this integral aspect of the community.
Well, great. It wouldn't be a pledge drive unless we had somebody to throw into the pool, like a new development person, and say, guess what? Here's a pledge drive, sink or swim.
Yeah. Starts Monday. I'm ready.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Y'all set, Renee?
We are set. John started 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, he is being thrown into the fire. And just one more thing I like to add about John. He sold us when he said he was really looking for a job in Park City. that had connection, community, and impact. And I think those are, that's a description of KPCW if I've ever heard one. So yeah, I think we're ready for our pledge drive, Leslie. It's going to be exciting. We're going to try to raise $200,000. We did that for the first time last winter, which was great. And I love how we have set up our pledge drives. And we do get compliments on people who actually like listening to our pledge drive because we invite a different nonprofit to come in to host every hour. And so people feel like they learn about that nonprofit as well as listening to our pleas for money. And we try not to be too pathetic about begging for money. But what makes it easy to get the phones ringing is that we offer really great premiums. So if someone calls in and they make a $50 pledge, they get a $25 gift certificate. Either to a restaurant in town or to a store. If they make a $150 pledge, they can get a ski pass, and that's a pretty good price for a day of skiing these days. So we're fortunate in that we've got the nonprofits that help us out, but we have a lot of local businesses that help us out as well
Big
by
time.
Donating those items.
Yeah, when we get a gift, we give a gift.
Right. So this is 3 weeks later than normal, and we held it around Valentine's Day. So why the change?
Well, we changed it last year. It was the first week in March last year, and we raised the most money than we've ever raised before. So we thought, aha, we're on to something.
The timing is right.
Timing is right. And what we found out is, the Park City School District February break hits around Valentine's Day, that middle of the month. And we really, we're a local public radio station. We serve our local community. And if the locals are out of town during your pledge drive, well, that didn't make much sense. So we also thought it was good because the businesses get so busy with Sundance at the end of January. So when we are going around the community and asking for donations for pledge drive, people say, well, talk to me after Sundance. Well, that's mid-February. Anyhow, logistic reasons, and it seemed to have paid off, so we're hoping it will work again this year.
So this $200,000 that you're going to hopefully raise, what does that pay for? As people can hear, there's lots of happening behind this wall.
Construction,
yeah, and an expansion.
Yeah, and there's the difference. So when people make a donation during our pledge drive, Leslie, that's keeping the lights on. That's paying for our operating costs. That is not going towards this construction and expansion project that we have happening. We are doing a separate capital campaign about that, and we will reach out to the community at some point this year and ask them to make a donation for that. But I can't impress enough. There are two distinct needs that the station has. We don't have subscription rates. People don't have to pay to consume what we produce every day.
Right.
You and the news team have done such a great job putting our news on our website, kpcw.org. We now have this show, Local News Hour, and all of our public affairs shows available via podcast. So if someone can't listen live between 8 and 9, they can just download the podcast and listen to it later. We're really expanding our service. We're expanding our reach. That costs more money than ever. And that's why I'm really happy that our pledge drives are bringing in more money than ever, because each pledge drive covers about 20 to 25% of our operating costs.
So can you just talk briefly about the expansion, though? What is it that we're doing out here?
I love talking about the expansion. I don't like the noise it's making on air, so thanks to all of our listeners who are putting up with that. We are adding 1,400 square feet. Elliott Work Group, they designed a great space for us, and the Big D Construction's doing the work. We are pushing out on over Sweet Alley on the west side and over Bob Wells Plaza on the north side. So we're cantilevering out over the liquor store. The liquor store is not expanding. It's going to be 1,400 square feet, which essentially doubles our workspace here. We're currently in 1,900 square feet, and about 500 of that is, the mechanical room and the engineering room. And anyone who has come to our station in the past 2 years has seen how we are squeezed together. And
tight.
John, I'm
That's
happy.
That's okay, though.
I'm happy we could recruit you, given you have a makeshift desk
right,
out front.
Right.
Yeah.
But
and
we
tables.
Love the work, yeah. So anything goes. Yeah.
And David Boyle works on half a desk, and we're tight. Thank goodness we all get along. But I think we would all be a little bit more productive if we had more space.
Okay, John, you've been real busy working on the auction again. Tell
the
us what
auction.
To,
Correct.
To look for yeah. when we open it up Monday 7 a.m.
Folks can go online now at kpcw.org and look at the online auction items and prepare and make a plan. I think that's a good idea. There's so many auction items. I think we're over 100 items and the value of which is just great. It helps feed the pledge drive totals. Items as low as $30 up to $1,600, from cookies to professional business services. We've got ski packages, goggles, jackets, sunglasses, boots, spa treatment, golfing, just about everything. And in fact, in building, I was texting my wife, like, prepare. There's going to be some deficits in our bank account next week because the items just look so great, and I'm ready to bid on just about all of them.
You got a couple of shot skis.
A couple of shot skis. Yeah, the classic skis. I forgot about those. Lazy Susan High West Distillery. Lazy Susan's. Yeah, great items.
Okay, that runs through Friday, 6 p.m.
Friday the 6th.
Yeah,
through launches, 6 p.m. It launches Monday morning at 7 a.m., and then we'll close at 6 p.m. on Friday. Correct.
Okay. On-air pitching, though, Renee, are we going to stick to that four-day goal?
Yeah, we are. So we shortened our pledge drives from 5 days to 4 days a few years back, and it worked. We're hoping to get to that $200,000 mark by the end of Thursday. We do work in the auction totals, and that does help. So, you know, if we're at about 180 on Thursday, I think we'll be satisfied that we've made our goal.
Okay. Well, we've got new phones. We think we're totally set for this. The power went out Monday, so it won't happen Monday of pledge drive. So I think we're ready.
With all of the changes we're making here, you know, changing the HVAC system, changing the phone system, getting new laptops in, I think the opportunity is ripe for something to maybe malfunction during the pledge drive. And that keeps us on our toes and just makes it that much more exciting.
Fingers are crossed all weekend long.
Yeah, but we want to thank some of the folks who have come in. You know, we have old favorites of our nonprofits, Summit Land Conservancy, Recycle Utah, Mountain Trails Foundation, People's Health Clinic, Peace House. They're coming in to host ours.
And great new nonprofits have joined us this year. Action Utah, Live Like Sam, Joseph James Morelli Legacy Foundation, and One Revolution, of course, with Chris Waddell.
And, you know, we've got some good hours that are sponsored by, like, Vail, Epic Promise, Deer Valley, Berkshire Hathaway, people who are really invested in this community and very nice supporters of this station. So it's good.
And we couldn't be happier. Bill White is joining us. Bill White Farms is going to be the recipient of the hour that the restaurant group will be sponsoring on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. And Bill White will be in the studio, so call in then.
And Lynn Ware Peak is one of the hosts of that hour, and she says Bill White can talk about regenerative agriculture like nobody else she knows. So we're looking forward to that hour.
Okay. Well, welcome to you, John. Glad to have you on board.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
All right. And we hope that all of our listeners will be a part of the pledge drive because, as we know, people who listen to the radio, I think the national average is like 10% actually contribute. So we'd sure love to bump that up of all of our listeners. So we'll talk to you more about that on Monday.
Great.
Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.